Thanks. Hi, everybody. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Polly.
And I'm really grateful to be here, and I thank Bob and Yvonne for calling and inviting me, and I'm really sorry that Yvonne's not here either, but thank you so much for inviting me here. And it's I've been to Orlando before, but it's really nice to be here again. In fact, I was here the year Disney World opened. And I have a friend here that's here this morning, and Max has known me since I was 19 years old, and next Monday I'll be 51, so that's a long time. So there's one person in this room this morning who has seen me drink, and and I was here visiting his wife with my two sons and their two children, and as we used to say in the Air Force, the boys were in Vietnam. So we were here, and Disney World opened, and I've been here a few times since. And I'm just glad to be here, and I was here visiting Dottie and Max, and I'm just grateful to be here this morning in a totally and completely different way, and that's as a representative of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I come to these podiums before I... You know, I'm. Besides being addicted to alcohol and drugs, I'm addicted to approval. And so I'm standing up here this morning, and it's just so necessary for you to approve of me. So, of course, I'm all nervous and everything because I want all of you to just love and adore me. And so it takes me a few minutes to get out of the way and let God kick in. So maybe if I just talk a little bit about my higher power, then the butterflies will land and I can get out of the way. When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, people began to talk about identify with the feelings. And that's what I began to do, because when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt like that I was not like you. Didn't you understand that I was an Air Force officer's wife? That things like this don't happen to people like me. You know, don't you understand that I didn't drink like you? Don't you understand that I haven't drank in bars? Just don't you understand? And I always felt so different. And people began to talk about the feelings. And I began to identify with the feelings. And that's what I want to talk about today, is feelings. Because I believe that the way we drank are the things that set us apart. But how we feel about the way we drank is the things that make us alike. And I had a lot of feelings that I just didn't know how. I didn't even know what they were. I just knew that I didn't like them, and I couldn't stand the feelings that were going on inside of me. And the only thing that ever made me equal with you was a drink of alcohol. That's the only thing that ever made me feel okay. Because in and of myself, I was just a zero. And I needed alcohol just to make me feel okay. And when I was growing up, besides being a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, I am a recovering Southern Baptist. And boy, when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a lot of old ideas. And I can remember when I was sitting in those Baptist Sunday schools and they would talk about God. And I just never, ever felt like I could measure up to what they were talking about. And I always felt like I was bad. And, you know, the meetings after the meetings, last night we had the meeting after the meeting. And let me digress, okay? Now I want to tell y'all that, you know, people think, well, gosh, they invite these speakers from Southern California. And, I mean, I flew 6 hours it takes by airplane to get here. And you'd think if you've invited somebody like that, that you've invited somebody that probably has a pretty good program. I'm here to tell you that that restaurant here in that hotel destroyed every program I have last night. I was reduced to telling the waitress off. I mean, and, you know, we talk about the halts, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. I was hungry and tired, and I'm here to tell you I'm mean when I'm hungry and tired. And here it was, 11 o'clock last night, and I still hadn't eaten. I had flown for 6 hours and spent 1 hour in Dallas, and I was not up to that lady at that restaurant last night. So I'm here to tell you, when I left that restaurant, when we got through eating, about 11:30 or a quarter to 12, I think, is when we finally were able to sign the check and get out of there, I needed a meeting. It was so, as I was telling someone who's fairly a newcomer, I said, you know, this program talks about the language of the heart. We're supposed to express love. I wish I came from love all the time, but folks, I just don't. And last night I didn't come from love. I came from, you know, just total anger. And but one of the things that I know is that today I have a place to go, and it's okay to be who I am, even though sometimes it's not who I'd like to be. At any rate, saying that, let's get a little honesty going here. Let's start off with the truth. But I would sit in these congregations in the Baptist church, and these preachers would start talking about things like, "You're born a sinner," and you know, if you're born a sinner and it's downhill from there, I mean, I just always felt like this is the most hopeless thing I can think of. And here I am, you know, this little kid about 9 years old sitting in a pew in the Baptist church, and I'm thinking, I'm so little. How did I get so bad so fast? I just didn't understand. And they would do things like they would reach out into the congregation and, "You're a sinner and you're going to burn in hell. And if you've thought it, you've done it." And you know, I was an alcoholic in the making and I thought a lot. So it was just kind of like, I just started having this feeling of being totally doomed, just hopeless. There's no way I'm ever going to be good enough. There's no way I'm ever going to be good enough for God. I am just absolutely doomed. And I could really identify with Angie when she was talking last night, because, you see, I have that kind of mind too. The minute you tell me, "Thou shalt not," I just have to. You know, and I would have never thought about it if you hadn't have told me not to do it. And I could really identify with Angie last night when she was talking about that. Because, you know, as soon as you told me not to do something, it might have never, ever come to my mind. But I just had to. And it was like, let's see what we can do to just stay on the edge. And I was kind of visiting a little bit with Max this morning, and I can remember doing things like that. It was just, see what you could do to just live on the edge. And if you weren't supposed to do it, I just had to do it. And that thing that goes on down inside of people like us. And as I've been around the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I know that other people feel that way too. I came to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, and they introduced me to a new God, to a God that is so different than the God I knew as a child. Because, you see, this God I knew as a child lived somewhere up in the sky. And he had white robes and he had a long beard. And I just knew he carried a clipboard. And all he was doing is just paying attention to me. You know, it's kind of like at Christmas time we hear the story, you know, Santa Claus making a list and checking it twice, going to find out who's naughty or nice. I just knew that that's what was happening. And, you know, there was just no way I was ever going to be good enough. But I came to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I learned about a new higher power. And you talked about a God in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that lives within. So today I know where God is. He's not out there anywhere. He's within. And I know how I can find God today. And the book tells me to search fearlessly. And the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I know I never, ever have to walk alone again. That wherever I go, God goes. And God, as I understand him, speaks to me through the people in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you see, if I know God is within me, then God is within you. And I love it that we call it the language of the heart, because I believe it's people like us who get to talk heart to heart. Because, you know, folks, we've already been there. Wherever they were talking about, I remember now them talking about those places in the Baptist church, and what I found out was, is I had to go there to get here. And I'm so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Also, I have a higher power who has an absolutely dynamite sense of humor. And I'd like to share that with you. My name is Polly. It's not Pauline or Paula, it's Polly. And I'm here to tell you, if you're a little girl and your name is Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. And I don't know if you're a sensitive alcoholic, but I'm sensitive. And I don't like to be teased, and I don't like to be laughed at. And you know, it was things like, Polly wants a cracker, and Polly Wally doodle all the day. And I just didn't like to be teased. And one of the things that I've learned about me is that I know that a lot of people have a lot of traumatic things happen to them through their parents, and they have some really horrendous experiences before they get to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But mine has been through other kids. The things that I remember is what happened to me through other kids. And today when I go and I see a playground of kids, and I see this one little kid over here, and she or he's standing, and the other kids are laughing and pointing at him, I know how that feels. Because, you see, I was that kid. I was that little girl who had that silly name, and I had zits all over my face, and people teased me, and I didn't know how to handle that. And I didn't like to be teased, because I was so sensitive that if you teased me, I just crumbled. But one of the things that I've learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's just no negatives in God's world. Everything is a positive. You see, today I know that I have a disease of perception. I just don't perceive things the way they really are. You see, my perception of reality is distorted. That's why I have to keep coming to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I need you to give me a reality check. Because my perception of reality is not the way things really are. And I used to perceive things as so horrible. But now I know that there are no negatives in God's world. And just because I perceive it as a negative, everything has a positive result. And I'm here to tell you today I love having the name Polly. As I can come into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, sometime I can go into rooms with 2,000 or 3,000 people. And if somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. Because, you know, there's just not very many Pollys in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm real grateful for that. I didn't know I had a disease called alcoholism. I knew I was a drunk, and I knew I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something. Because I knew I was dying, and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift. Because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. 11 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. So, I don't know about your higher power, but my higher power has a dynamite sense of humor. Because I guarantee you, you're not going to walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. I mean, it's just... I'm such a brat today. I tell you, I love it. I just love to go up to people and, you know, stick out my hand, and if they don't know me, and say, hi, my name's Polly Pistol. And just watch them stand there and try to get it together, you know, to talk to me. It's just... it's great. Turn into a brat. A wonderful sense of humor, and I think that's the thing that we do. It's so neat because we come into these rooms and we can laugh together, and that's a miracle, the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I would sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would begin to identify with the feelings, and people would stand up at podiums and they would talk about their alcoholic mom or their alcoholic dad. And you see, my mother and dad were not alcoholic. I'm here to tell you, folks, I'm living, breathing proof that you can come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and not come from alcoholic parents. In fact, I just saw my mother in August. And my mother is 73 years old. And she has 73 years of sobriety. And my mother is not the least bit impressed with my 14 years of sobriety. See, her deal is if you just wouldn't have drank, you'd have never been in that, you'd never gotten in that trouble anyway. And she does every time. She comes from a little bitty town in West Texas, and I'm sure there's some little bitty towns in Central Florida that's just like that, where everybody knows everybody's business. And she'll meet me in Abilene, and she'll say to me the thing she says every time when she meets me at the airport in Abilene, and she'll say, "Now, honey, you don't need to let anybody know you're an alcoholic." And you know, the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I don't need to let anybody know in Stamford, Texas that I'm an alcoholic. I don't need to do that. And you know, I hear people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and they talk about, well, I wish my dad or I wish my mom would be here to see me take a cake. I wish that they could see what I'm doing in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I understand that. Because, you see, I wanted my mom and dad to know what I was doing in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, too. I would have loved to have my mother or my dad come to a meeting. I'd love to have seen them see me take a cake in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But my mother or dad have never been to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I understand how that feels. But, you know, I always stood around waiting for people to understand me. I have always wanted my mother and dad to understand my disease of alcoholism. But you know what the miracle is in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for me? Is that today I understand that my mother doesn't understand. And that's what I need to know. I need to know that she doesn't understand. And that when I go to Stamford, Texas, it is my responsibility as a recovering member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to uphold the 12th tradition in our fellowship, and that is I have absolutely no right to break my mother's anonymity. And when I go there, it's real important that I don't let anybody know that I am an alcoholic. And those are the things that you have taught me, because she has a right to her anonymity. And it's not necessary that she understand my disease. It's just necessary that I understand she doesn't understand. And I'm so grateful that you taught me that, because it hurt for a very long time. And today I know that. And when I would sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people would talk about their alcoholic mom or their alcoholic dad, and they would tell the stories about the way they felt, I began to have those same feelings. Because, you see, I felt the same way. And I began to understand a lot about my father. Because, you see, my father never drank. But my father was a man that used to have attacks of rage, just like a periodic alcoholic. And you never, ever knew when Daddy was going to have one of his fits, as my mother used to say. And my dad used to have these fits, and my mother used to say, "Polly, you just be nice. If you'll just be nice, then Daddy won't have one of his fits." But you see, Daddy always had one of his fits. And when Daddy would have one of his fits, furniture would fly, and he'd curse and yell, and he'd knock my mother around. And somehow or another, I always felt like it had something to do with me. Had I just been better or done better, then Daddy wouldn't have had one of his fits. And I began to identify with how you felt about your alcoholic dad. And I used to look at him and I used to say the same things I've heard in meetings that people would say about their alcoholic father. And I would say, "There's no way I'll ever be like you." And the irony of it was, I became just like him. And I would look at my mother and I would be so disgusted. I would say, "You know, you're such a wimp. Why don't you stand up for yourself? How can you sit there and let this man do these things to you?" And the irony of it was, I became just like her. I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous the worst of both my parents. I was an angry wimp. I was one of these people. Yeah. Does everybody know what sarcasm is? You know, sarcasm are these darling little remarks that are supposed to be cute, but they rip our guts out. I was just one of these people that just seemed to be a recipient of sarcasm. You know, somebody would throw me one of those zingers, and, you know, I might flinch or something, and then they would say, "Oh, Polly, I'm sorry, did that hurt?" And it was like, "Oh, no, that's okay." And I would swallow it down. And I've learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever goes down's got to come up. And what I would do is I would swallow down all that anger and all that rage, and I would take it home, and I would take it out on my two little boys. But to the rest of the world, I just looked so nice. But down inside was this angry, violent person that would take it out on her children. I'm so grateful today that I know that, and I've learned that in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I have a disease, and it's spiritual in nature. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about me suffering from a spiritual malady. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about being cut off from the sunshine of the Spirit. And today I know that I have a disease that is spiritual in nature. Because, you see, I was an only child. And I know that my parents not only loved me, they absolutely adored me and would have given me anything they could possibly have given me because they loved me so much. But today I know because I had a disease and it was spiritual in nature, there would not have mattered how much my parents loved me. It would have not have mattered how much they gave to me. It would not have mattered how much they did for me, because nothing would have been enough. Because I have a disease called alcoholism, and that disease cuts me off spiritually, and I remain empty. And nothing fills that up, absolutely nothing, but God's love. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. But I had married a SAC officer. And this man not only was going to be gone, he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself, and I didn't know how to do that. I absolutely did not know how to be responsible for myself. And I have learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I am a person who would have gladly turned my will and my life over to anybody who would have taken it. I just didn't want to be responsible for myself. And I learned to drink in the U.S. Air Force. And I also felt real betrayed by the Baptist Church when I got into the Air Force, because I remember them telling me that people who drank were bad. And these people drank, and these were not bad people. These were good people. And I took a drink of alcohol like anybody else takes a drink of alcohol. I took a drink because everybody else was taking a drink. And it never occurred to me that it was any different for me than it was for anybody else. And for a long time, it wasn't. And for a long time, alcohol was the best friend I had, because it was the thing that made me able to function. It was the thing that gave me courage. It was the thing that made me equal to you. And for a long time, it worked. And I'm here to tell you something, folks. If it still worked, you'd have another speaker. And we talk about in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous progressing to the morning drink. I never progressed to the morning drink. I started with the morning drink. And we used to have these little things in the Air Force, and we called them coffees. But I guarantee you, they served more than coffee. They served screwdrivers and Bloody Marys. So in the morning, it was screwdrivers and Bloody Marys. It was sherry before lunch, martinis before dinner, and Black Russians and Stingers after. And it never, ever occurred to me that there was anything wrong with drinking like that. And for a long time, it wasn't. I'd like to tell you a few things that brought me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if any of you have ever done any control drinking, but I'd kind of like to describe some control drinking. As my disease progressed, I knew that if I drank too much, I couldn't guarantee my behavior. And I'm here to tell you that if you attend a function in the Air Force, it is not cool to be drunk and out of order. You need to remain a lady at all times. And, of course, I was really prepared for this job because I'm Southern-born and raised, and I don't know if any of you other people are Southern-born and raised, but when I was with my mother, it didn't matter, you know, what your feelings were. You're to walk out of this house, put a smile on your face, and it doesn't matter how you feel. What matters is what do the neighbors think. So I knew how to look the part. I knew how to look good. So it was not okay to be drunk when you went to a function like this. So as the disease of alcoholism progressed, I would go to a function and I would just sip a drink. Now, I don't know if you've had to do some control drinking, but I'm here to tell you, a four-hour party can be a lifetime. It was just like a lifetime. I could not wait till I got home and I could drink all I wanted. Along about 1962, we got stationed in a very northern base. And this was in Hilton Head when I said this. I gave the name of this Air Force base, and I called it the armpit of the world. And I can remember when Max flew up there, and he said, gosh, we can't tell these people how bad off they are because they really don't know. But I can remember I called that the armpit of the world, and this guy came up to me after the meeting, and he said, you know, after you started talking further, I really did enjoy what you had to say. But you saying that about that place really hurt my feelings because I'm from there. So, you know, it's like, once again, open mouth, insert foot. But at any rate, we were stationed at this very northern base. And I've got these two little boys, and I have absolutely no idea. This is really feeding back. Am I standing too close? Drive everybody crazy. At any rate, I have these two little boys, and I have no idea how to be a parent. I don't know how to take care of kids. I don't know what to do with kids. And it's like 50 below zero, and there's no way that I can tell these little boys to go outside to play. What are we going to do? Is that what's causing the feedback? Yeah. It's like it stopped, huh? Yeah. If there's something wrong here, isn't it me? Oh, God. Thanks. I know, I was thinking, gosh, it's making me crazy, and I'm not even having to be out there listening to it. Thanks a lot. Anyway, I had these two little boys, and we're stationed in this very northern base. I have no idea how to be a parent. I have no tools in which to be a parent, and these little boys are driving me crazy, and I'm having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. And I go to an Air Force doctor, and he says, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I took Valium and Librium and Seconal and Nimitol and drank alcohol. And I tell you, as my disease of alcoholism progressed, I was not an active alcoholic. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic. And this is because Max is here today. I can remember many times having a dinner party and not being able to get there because I fell asleep. The dinner party was at my house. And I couldn't make the party because I fell asleep. I just say that I just laid on my sofa and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. I've also learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that the disease of alcoholism is a family disease, and that anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. Because, you see, I call myself a couch potato alcoholic, but my disease of alcoholism looked a lot different to my children. I have a son who's also recovering in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the opportunity to hear James share from a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my disease sounds very different from James, because James talks about being a little boy. And he talks about his mother being passed out on the sofa, but you see, he doesn't know that she's passed out. And he talks about his mother laying there on the sofa and his father being gone. And he talks about the fear that's inside of him as he walks back and forth in front of that sofa, and his father's gone, and he is just certain that his mother is dead, and he doesn't know what to do. That's the disease of alcoholism. And anyone who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. One night I was laying on my sofa. It was about 8 o'clock at night, and if it was 8 o'clock at night, I was always passed out on my sofa. And my husband jerked me up, and he sat me at the kitchen table, and he said, "Alcohol and pills are our problem. And if you just wouldn't drink, and if you just wouldn't take these pills, everything would be okay." And he started pouring the booze down the sink, and he started pouring the pills down the garbage disposal. And I just sort of sat there in my comatose state. Because in my disease of alcoholism, I had progressed to the point where I ceased to go to sleep and wake up. I passed out and came to. I'd also taken to drinking things like NyQuil cough medicine and Scope. Because, you see, in my alcoholic mind, it didn't have anything to do with, I thought you couldn't tell if I was drinking unless you could smell me. So, I figured if I drank NyQuil cough medicine or vanilla extract or Scope, then you couldn't smell me. And I don't know what I thought about behavior, but I thought it had all to do with smell, And at that time I smoked about 2 packs of cigarettes a day, so, I had a bad cough. So if you carry NyQuil around in your purse, nobody asks. At any rate, I just sort of sat there in my comatose state, and when he got done, I just went and passed out again. And I woke up about 3 in the morning, and I was just so sick, I just didn't believe that I could get in my car to drive to the 7-Eleven to get a bottle of NyQuil. And that night I found myself crawling around my garage floor, going through the plastic bags to take those bottles, to turn them up, to just get one drop. I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about the dilemma of the alcoholic, where to drink is to die and not to drink is to die. And I absolutely had to have a drink of alcohol or I would surely die. And that night my husband caught me downing a bottle of rubbing alcohol. I absolutely had to drink to live. Shortly thereafter, I had an automobile accident, and I totaled an automobile in Irving, Texas. And to make a very long story short, because I am a blackout drinker, I called the police and told them that my car had been stolen. And here come the police with my husband, and I'm taken to the Irving police station. And at the Irving police station, I get to see that look on the non-alcoholic's face that just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman looked at my husband with so much disgust, and he says, "Why don't you just take her home and sober her up?" And on the way home, he looked at me and he said, "Polly, there's a treatment center, and it's not far from my house, and I wish you would go." And that night, I entered treatment for the first time. And this was a great place. This was a detox center, and it was a 7-day detox center, and you went in there, and you detoxed, and they sent you to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I loved what I saw in this treatment center, because we were going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and you were laughing, and I loved the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I loved the laughter, and I loved the love. But there was just something way down inside of me that just said, "Polly, people like you just don't become alcoholic." And while I was in this treatment center, I had what we call in Texas a jitterhouse romance. You know, where sick falls in love with sick and you're going to walk off into happy destiny. Well, we walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because, you see, I had been beaten up in numerous and sundry other things when I was 12 steps out of that motel room and brought back into that treatment center. And now I knew what my problem was. My problem wasn't drinking. My problem was sobriety. I can't live sober. I can't live sober with the feelings that are going on inside of me. I can't live sober with what went on in that motel room. I can't live sober with the kind of mother I've become. I can't live sober with the kind of wife I've become. I can't live sober with the kind of daughter I've become. And I've heard in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that men hate what they've done and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I knew that there was absolutely no way that I could live sober. I just could not live inside my own skin. And when that 7 days was up, I got a bottle of scotch, and I got a bottle of Valium, and I checked into a motel room. Because there was no way that I could live sober. There was no way that I could live with what was going on inside of me. But you know, I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that doesn't have an Eskimo in your life. And an Eskimo is someone who leads us to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you've never heard the story about the Eskimo, I want to tell you about it. There was a priest, and he was talking to a man up in Alaska, and he says, "Isn't God good?" And the man says, "Well, I don't know. I asked God for help one time, and he didn't do a thing." And the priest said, "Oh, would you care to tell me about that?" And he said, "Yes, I was lost in the bush of Alaska, and I got down on my knees, and I asked God to help me, and he didn't do a thing." And the priest said, "Well, my goodness, he must have done something. You're here." He said, "God didn't do a thing. This Eskimo came along and gave me a ride to town." And I think that's what happens to us, is an Eskimo comes along and gives us a ride to town. But it may not look like that at the time. Maybe it's a spouse who says, "You just can't live here any longer because I can't stand what your drinking is doing to me." Maybe it's a parent who tells a child, "You can't live in this house any longer because we can't stand what your disease is doing to us." Maybe it's an employer who says, "You can't work here any longer until you get your act together." Or maybe it's a nudge from the judge that gets you into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Or maybe it's someone you've seen who's living a life of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and has the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous carved in their life. But somehow, some way, we get to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a lady in my life, and she knew absolutely nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said this day that something came over her. And see, today I know what that something was. That something was God working in my life through her. And she said she drove around until she saw my car parked outside this motel room. And I hadn't shut the door all the way. It was on a half latch. And she pushed that door open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Now, needless to say, that didn't take, because I'm standing here today. But I need to tell you about the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for a very long time, and I was not in touch with the grace of life. I had absolutely no idea about God's love for me. And you know how we go to the meeting after the meeting and everybody tells there, "Can you top this story?" Well, how do you talk about being a couch potato alcoholic? You know, I haven't had a DUI. I haven't been to jail. I didn't have an affair. I had all my affairs sober. How do you talk about these things? How do you talk about, "Mike, can you top this story?" So "Mike, can you top this story" was, well, I was pronounced dead on arrival, feeling absolutely nothing. I had to hit a bottom in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that was ever bit as devastating as the bottom I had hit behind alcohol and drugs. And that bottom was behind relationships and sex. I was just so desperate to be loved. I just knew that if you could just love me, because you see, in and of myself, I was a nothing. I needed you to validate my very existence. And if you would just love me and tell me you loved me, because you see, I couldn't do it for myself. And I had to destroy myself sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because I was just so desperate to be loved. And it was people in this program that used to walk around and say, Polly, it's an inside job. There is no way you're going to ever feel it from the outside of you. You have to feel it from the inside of you. You have to heal from the inside out. And I never could understand that for a very long time. And I didn't have a God of my understanding. I sat in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for such a long time, and I didn't have a God of my understanding. And I used to just walk, I used to just talk the talk. I couldn't walk the walk. And you see, I would go to meetings and I would talk about my higher power because you were talking about your higher power. And I knew I needed to say the things that you said. But I had fears going inside of me that were just absolutely devastating. And the fear was, is you're going to find out that I don't have a higher power, that I am just talking about it, and I really don't have a higher power. But the worst fear of all was, is that you have one, and I'll never find one. I just knew that I would sit in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would never, ever find a higher power, that you had it, and I didn't. And somewhere along about 5.5 years of sobriety, I am a real slow learner in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, sobriety has been slow-briety for me. And I have just been real slow in getting this program. And somewhere along about 5.5 years of sobriety, I'm sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this wonderful feeling comes over me. And that feeling is everything's going to be okay. And most of the time today, I have that feeling that no matter what, everything's going to be okay. When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to just think I was so different. And today I know that I am not unique, that I am typical. And that if I am a person who sat in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sat here for 5.5 years, and I didn't have a God of my understanding, then maybe there are people who are sitting in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they have been here for many years, and they don't have a higher power either. And the hope that I would like to give to you this morning is that if you are sitting in this room, and you have not found a God of your understanding, to just please, please don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. Because if you just continue to suit up and show up to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, the miracle will happen to you. And the reason that I can promise that is because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous promises that. It says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that all of these promises are being fulfilled. Some of them faster, some of them slower, but they will all materialize if we work for them. So just please, please keep coming back. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says the main object of this book is to find a power greater than yourself that can solve your problems. So please, just don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. I ended up in a hospital in Dallas, Texas. And people like me who don't become alcoholic, I had just been court committed to treatment. And my papers read that I was a detriment to myself and others. And I walked into that hospital on April the 11th of 1977. And by God's grace in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had to have a drink since. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about us being selfish and self-centered. And my disease is selfish and self-centered. Because I can remember when my husband and I had been in the Air Force. And I remember sitting across from a desk and a doctor telling me how ill my husband was. And that my husband was suffering from congestive heart failure and his prognosis was very poor. And I can remember feeling, how can this be happening to me? Who's going to take care of me and these two boys? I'm so grateful today for a program called Alcoholics Anonymous because, you see, today I don't feel that way. Today I have the feeling of what can I do for you and how can I help you? But that's not how I felt at that time. A disease of selfishness and self-centeredness. When I walked into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was one of these people who whined a lot. And I am also a recovering whiner. I don't know if there's any other whiners in here. But I was one of these people who was just so totally misunderstood. And I used to walk around meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and say, nobody understands me. And it was people like you and rooms like this that would tell me, Polly, you get into the 12 and 12 and you just burn the 11 step prayer in your brain because it has absolutely nothing to do with you being understood. It has only to do that you be understanding. And it has absolutely nothing to do that you be forgiven, only that you be forgiving. And it has absolutely nothing to do that you be loved, only that you be loving. And you see, I always had that so turned around because I just knew that if you just gave it to me, that if you just loved me enough, that I would be okay. But you see, the deal is that I have to reach outside of myself and love you. And you know, I think that's what drives psychiatrists and psychologists crazy about us. Because you see, I have a spiritual disease. And the only way that I can heal from a spiritual disease is to reach outside of myself and to you. And if I help you, I in turn help me. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That I have to help you in order to help me. And you know, I learned that in that Baptist Sunday school. I just didn't remember learning it. Because in that Baptist Sunday school they used to talk about, you will reap what you sow. And whatever I put into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is exactly what I'm going to get back. And I'm one of these people that, you know, I don't know about you when you came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I couldn't sit down and read the Big Book. And I couldn't sit down and read the 12 and 12. Man, I was just too nervous. But they started to talk about get active in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Be a participant in your own sobriety. And I have absolutely no idea how you stay sober by sweeping floors and stacking chairs and making coffee and talking to other alcoholics. But all I know is that it works. That I know that if I get active in my sobriety and I suit up and show up and occupy a seat in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and get up that day and try to be of maximum service to God and others, I get better. Now, I don't know how that works. Have you ever tried to explain the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to a non-alcoholic? There's no way to explain what we do here. That you get up and you talk about the disease of alcoholism and you go to these dreary meetings and you drink coffee and you just talk a lot and everybody stays sober. Have you ever tried to explain that? But somehow or another, we do those things and it works. And I don't know how that works. The thing about it is, I know that it works. And if you're somebody this morning who is sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you don't believe that you're getting out of the meeting what you think you ought to be getting out of the meeting, maybe you ought to check and ask yourself what you're putting into the meeting. Because I was told that if I want to get out of this meeting, everything that I want to get out of it, maybe I better check what I'm putting into it. And you know, I have found out for me, the more I give to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the more I get back. And I was taught that when I was going to those Baptist Sunday schools. Whatever you put out, you get back tenfold. And I don't know about you, but I want it all. I want it all. I want what this program can give to me. And I'm so grateful that I had people who told me to get busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and to get active. And you know something else, folks? I hope I never get too sober to call a newcomer. I hear people talk about that all the time in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I hope I just never get too sober. I hope that I don't have to wait around for people to call me. Because you see, I need to reach out. I'm never too sober to reach out to a person in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I hear people talk in this program, well, if such and such wanted this program, they'd call. Well, you know something, folks, I am forever grateful that Bill didn't wait for Bob to call. Because had Bill waited for Bob to call, none of us would be sitting here in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bob made 10 phone calls to talk to another alcoholic so he wouldn't take a drink of alcohol. So I have learned that it's not about me saving souls in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's about me saving my ass in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, it's about me reaching out to another alcoholic so I get to stay sober. And you know, that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, is one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. The very thing that has made this so precious. And you know, there has been nothing more precious in my life than to be able to sit down and to talk with a woman who is absolutely devastated with pain. And for her to be able to share that pain with me, and me to be able to share my pain with her. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. To just know that I can sit down there and take everything outside of me and share it with you. Because when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was told, you're just as sick as your secrets. And you know, I am so grateful that I can stand here today and let you know that somebody in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous knows every single secret I have about me. And you know, and that's okay. And you know, I think about today of my mother, because you see, she doesn't have the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my disease is so shameful to her. She's so ashamed of the disease of alcoholism. But thanks to this program, I am not ashamed anymore. I am not ashamed of the things that have happened to me. Because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that those experiences are my greatest asset. Today I know that every experience that I have had has been the things that I need to experience in my path so that I could share it with somebody else. And today I know that those experiences are my greatest asset. Because if I didn't have those experiences, then I wouldn't be able to share those experiences with another alcoholic. There are no negatives in God's world. No negatives in God's world. I am so grateful today for the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about that our problems, that most of our problems are of our own making. You see, I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous a victim. I was a victim because I was an only child. I was a victim because I was raised Southern Baptist. I was a victim because I was in the U.S. Air Force. And I was also a victim because I was born woman and I thought men had it better. I was a victim. And I am so grateful today that I know that my problems are of my own making. Because you see, if my problems are of anybody else's making, I'm screwed. Because there is absolutely nothing I can do about other people, places, and things. And today I am so grateful that my problems are of my own making, because I've got a shot at changing. Because you see, I can change me. With the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, rooms like this, and a loving God, I can change.
And if you're new here this morning, if you're a newcomer in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no big deal. You don't have to change much, just everything. Everything. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that Don read, it says that we must get rid of all, A-L-L, all our old ideas are the results are nil. That means that everything I came here with has to be changed. Everything. I have to get rid of all my old ideas or the results are nil. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks a lot about change. It talks about a profound change, a psychic change, a total change. It says that I have to change. But you know, the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I get to come to rooms like this, and you get to help me change. And together, we get to do that. I never, ever have to walk alone again. We get to do that together. And if you don't think you make a difference, see, you never know when God is going to use us. We never know when we're going to be the one that God uses. We make a difference. You know, it's real easy for me to come into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and to be wonderful in here. But for me to take myself outside these rooms and practice these 12 steps, practice these principles in all my affairs, what an order. I can't go through with it. But it's necessary for me to live and act this program at all times because you never, ever know who's watching. And you know, sometimes you don't ever get to know if you've done something for somebody's life. You maybe don't know that you've made a difference. But if somebody walks up to you and they tell you, you know, I heard you share in a meeting, or I watched you do such and such, and that changed my life. Don't think, my friend, that folks aren't watching. It is real necessary that I live this program. It is my responsibility as a sober member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to practice these principles in all my affairs. When I was 3 years sober, I divorced in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used to think that my husband needed me because, you see, without me, he would surely die because he was sick. And I used to walk around meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and talk about how this man needed me and how he would die if I weren't around. And it was rooms like this and people like you who'd get up in my face and tell me things I wanted to hear, you know, that I didn't want to hear. You know how people in Alcoholics Anonymous tell you the truth, whether you want to hear it or not? And they'd get up in my face and they'd say, Polly, your husband is not dying of congestive heart failure. You are. Why don't you just drop the rock? Now, I want to tell you how important I am in this man's life. That we divorced, and 6 months later, he remarried a much younger woman. And he has never been healthier or happier since. I found out he had a higher power that wasn't me. When I was 3.5 years sober, I married another member of this fellowship. And Dave had known me since I was 6 months sober. And Dave and I often say if we'd have known we were going to get married, we'd have never told each other the things we told each other. Because, you see, Dave and I were friends in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Dave is my greatest gift from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thank you so much for Dave. Because, you see, Dave is also a member of this fellowship. And Dave has taught me about love. Dave has totally and completely loved me unconditionally. And I have learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that love is a healer. And that where love is present, then character defects surface. And the character defects surface so that the love can heal it. And I'm here to tell you, folks, I've had a lot of character defects surface so that the love can heal them. And I'd kind of like to share some of that with you. Probably the worst character defect I've had is the character defect of jealousy. Because, you see, if I think Dave is the greatest guy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think all the other women think so, too. And I'm here to tell you also that I sponsor the most gorgeous women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And every last one of them are younger than me, and they're all thinner than me, and that's worse. And they adore Dave, and he adores them. And I had a lot of problems with that. But today I know that jealousy is just my own insecurities, and that my jealousy has nothing to do with Dave or those beautiful women. That when jealousy is present, the only relationship that needs any attention is my relationship with God. Because you see, when my relationship with God is in order, then I don't have those icky feelings. So that's my barometer today. When those icky feelings come over me, I don't need to take a look at those beautiful women. And I don't need to take a look at Dave. The only relationship that I need to check out is my relationship with God. Because when my relationship with God is in order, then I don't have those icky feelings. Dave and I are two different kinds of people. I'm one of these kind of people that is, I'm just busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had the opportunity and the gift to be able to travel across the country and get to come to places like Orlando, Florida. And it's a miracle because you get to meet all these people and you get to have all this fun. And I just love to do things in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if there's a committee, I don't want to be on your committee. I want to be the chairman of your committee. And I'm one of these people that just, I love to work with women. And I even have a walk-around telephone because, I mean, you know, God forbid that, you know, I just walk around because you can't miss a thing, you know. And maybe I don't have time to sit down and talk. So I just don't stop. I just keep moving. But Dave is real different. Dave is one of these quiet kind of guys that likes to go with a bunch of recovering men. And he likes to put a 40-pound pack on his back, and he likes to walk around on top of mountains. And he's different. But the miracle of the program, if Alcoholics Anonymous, is you have taught us how to have a relationship here. See, I never knew how to have a relationship. I knew how to take a hostage, but I didn't know how to have a relationship. See, if I had a relationship with somebody, you were just supposed to pay attention to me. But you have taught me here that I have to go be the very best me I can be, and Dave has to go be the very best Dave he can be. And I'm so grateful today that Dave and I have been able to let each other go, and Dave can go be the very best Dave he can be, and I can go be the very best Polly that I can be. And those are the things that you taught me in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have learned about trust, and I have learned about letting go, and I have learned that love is an action. And that if you love somebody, you treat them like you love them. Loving somebody and punching them in the face or going outside and talking about them after you've looked at them straight in the face and said, I love you, is not love. Love is about showing a person on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis that you love them. I have learned that love is an action. You know, it's about walking the walk instead of talking the talk. And those are the things that I have learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am so grateful for that. I am so grateful for the 11 years of being able to love this man with all my heart, and that you have taught me how to do that. I want to quickly tell you about my two sons. When I got sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know if I could stay sober because I was absolutely so guilty about what had happened to my two boys. You see, the disease of alcoholism is a family disease, and people who live with a practicing alcoholic are affected by the disease of alcoholism. And my two sons had been terribly affected by the disease of alcoholism, and I could see this. And you know, the hardest thing, I think, for me is to look me straight in the eye and to tell the truth about me. You know, I had to look in the mirror and just look at me head on. And the hardest thing I had to do was stand in front of a mirror and look at me and say, Polly, you are a child abuser. And what you have done because of a disease of alcoholism has been a lot of abuse. Now, I didn't violently beat my children up, but what I did because of a disease of alcoholism was every bit as devastating. And that was because of a disease called alcoholism, I could not be emotionally present for my children. And I ripped from them the most valuable thing they have, and that is their self-worth and their self-esteem, because of a disease called alcoholism. When I got sober, I realized that my 14-year-old son was a full-blown drug addict. And I used to walk around rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd say, it just isn't fair. How can this be happening to James? I'm sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was rooms like this and people like you that said, Polly, you just suit up and show up because you may be the only big book that James ever reads. And my oldest son is one of our Al-Anons. And you know, our Al-Anons need one of us so they don't have a purpose for living. And I was the person that Russ took care of. And you know, I don't know when it's the last time you've seen a passed out drunk, but we don't breathe too good. And many is the time that I've come to with my son screaming, Mom, wake up, are you dead? And me to come to and see the fear in his eyes. And you know, for the past 14 years, I haven't had to come to and see that kind of fear in anybody's eyes because of something I'm doing. And for that, I've been overpaid in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, what would a good Al-Anon do if their alcoholic sobered up but go marry a practicing alcoholic? And she sobered up. And one more time, my son didn't have a purpose for living. And my daughter-in-law called me up and she told me that my son had taken a bottle of sleeping pills and he had cut up his arms. And you know, I wanted to get on the next thing smoking to Texas because by then Dave and I had moved to California. And one more time, it was rooms like this and people like you that said, Polly, you just suit up and show up and you let God take care of Russ. Well, God took care of Russ and Russ divorced the lady in California and he moved to Sheboygan, Michigan. And I like to lovingly say that Russ ran into his drug of choice, which was another woman. And he and Cheryl ended up marrying and they moved to New Jersey. And the hell began. Because now my daughter-in-law is calling me up on the phone and she doesn't understand why Russ hates himself so bad. She doesn't understand why Russ always wants to hurt himself. But I understood. Because one of the things that I've had a lot of problems with in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I've just hated myself so badly. I can remember a man named Milt in Southern California, and Milt's got about 28 years of sobriety, and I can remember Milt saying, the hardest thing I'll ever do in this lifetime is love myself. And the hardest thing I'll ever do in this lifetime is to love myself. But I've hated myself, and I have suffered from a lot of depression in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And suicide was an option in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous until I was 8 years sober. And I am so grateful today that that's no longer an option. But I understood how Russ felt. I understood what it's like to be so desperate and to hate yourself so bad that you want to hurt yourself just to get rid of the emotional pain. If you can just hurt yourself, it'll just feel better. And I understood what that was about. And my daughter-in-law said she just couldn't understand what it was about. And that year, my son began to try to take his life. And he would try 6 times to take his life. And there were times I just didn't believe that I could stand it. There were times that I believed that God was big enough to take care of me. But was he big enough to take care of, Russ? I just didn't know. I just absolutely didn't know if I could stand it. But you know, when the teacher's ready, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And that's what happened to me. When the student was ready, the teacher appeared. And I had the opportunity to go out of town just like I am today. And I was sharing from a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous because that night, before I shared that following morning, much like today, my daughter-in-law had called me and my son was in the hospital and he had put a pair of scissors in his stomach. One more time, he just couldn't stand the pain of living. And I got up behind the podium that morning and I just didn't believe that I could stand it. I just didn't believe that I could stand what was happening to my son. And a man walked up to me after that meeting was over and he had over 40 years of sobriety. And he said to me, he says, Polly, sit down because you and I need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we need to read the chapter to the agnostic. And you need to know that God is either all things or He's nothing. That God either is or He isn't. And with that man's help that day, I was able to release my son. You know, I so believe in the power of prayer and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I would share many times about Russ, and people would come up to me and they'd say, I'm going to pray for your son. There is a member of this fellowship named Barney. And Barney reached out to my son because they're in the same industry. It was the people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that reached out to my son. By God's grace in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to release my son. In the very next month, my son entered the program of Al-Anon. And my son will be in Al-Anon 3 years on November the 3rd. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, a little while ago, probably about 6 or 8 months ago, if I were Sharon, I would say, well, Russ doesn't do it my way. You know, Russ goes to a meeting once a week, whether he needs it or not. And believe me, I don't think that's enough meetings. Well, I'm here to tell you this morning, folks, Russ is doing it my way. And Russ attends a minimum of 3 meetings a week. He has a sponsor. He works the steps. And he's doing it my way. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he loves Al-Anon. And he says to me things like, I can't believe that I ever wanted to kill myself. And you know, I understand that because you see, that's the way I feel. I can't ever believe that I ever wanted to kill myself. When I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone and he said, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, he didn't want what I have. 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he says, don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. And I said, well, if you want what I have, you probably need to attend meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, well, he didn't believe he was that bad. So he ended up attending a fellowship called Adult Children of Alcoholics. And in that fellowship, he found the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, this program works in mysterious ways. Because I had 12-stepped a lady into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in Bedford, Texas. And that was the lady who took my son to his first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And you know, the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's nothing I could do to get my kids here. So you know what? You get to bring my kids in and I get to bring your kids in. And that's the way this deal works. Because I've brought a lot of other people's kids into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was them who brought my sons into the program. That was on January the 3rd. Let me think, is it 81? James has 8 years of sobriety, so however long that is. He's got 8 years of sobriety. I forget the year, but that was on January the 3rd, and it was 8 years ago. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm happy to say today that James lives in Chicago. He is an active member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know which group Frank goes to, but I understand he also comes from Chicago. And James lives in Evanston, and he is a member of the North Shore Al-Anon group. And he's active in this program. And you know, what I have learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that recovery is progressive. The disease of alcoholism is progressive, but so is recovery. And some miracles happened. Last July 4th, we got to celebrate sobriety at Bill W.'s family reunion in Seattle, and James was there with his fiancée, Kelly. And this past April, Dave and I got to go to Chicago, and we got to watch Kelly and James be married. Because you see, Kelly is a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, too. And we got to stand there and watch James and Kelly have an AA wedding. We got to be there, and his brother and Cheryl came from New Jersey. His father and his wife came from Texas. My mother was there, and Dave and I were there. We were all there. It was a family affair. and we got to watch James and Kelly take their vows, and we got to hear other alcoholics share and wish them well, because it was an AA wedding. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I stood there on this beautiful day and I watched them as they got married, I thought, the thing that's common here, the common denominator in this wonderful day, is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because had it not been for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that day would have never been possible. And I was so grateful, as I am today, I am so grateful, because I could have died and missed the whole thing. Except for a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I could have missed the whole thing. I am so grateful for this recovery. You know, if you'd have had me make a list of all the things that I wanted in sobriety, I would have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the things that He's given me. I would have never had nerve to ask God to give me a husband like Dave, friends like you, a job like I have today. I would have never had the nerve, and the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to me, I would have settled for so much less. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to my own devices, I will self-destruct. The very best I could do for me, the very best, was to get me pronounced dead on arrival. That's the very best I could do for me. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, you have breathed life into me. And today, I am all the things that I have ever wanted to be. Today, I am the woman I have always wanted to be. Today, I am self-supporting through my own contribution. And I never knew that I could do that. Today, I have been faithful and true to one man for 11 years. And I never, ever knew that I could do that. Today, I am a good friend. You have taught me how to be a good friend. Today, I know about commitments because you have taught me about commitments. I am so grateful for the lessons that I have learned in sobriety. And most of all, the thing that I am so grateful for is that you have taught me how to be a mom. Today, I am the mom that I have always wanted to be. My sons call me. My sons love me. They respect me. And I'm so grateful to that. Because today, because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, there is healing in our home. And we are healing from all the things that the disease of alcoholism caused. The recovery is healing. And I am so grateful for that gift. Today, to be the mom that I had always wanted to be. When I was in Center Hospital, one of the counselors used to start every day with a prayer, and I end my AA talks with it, because it's what this fellowship means to me. I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. Thank you.
Thank you, Polly, and we'd like to give you a token of our appreciation for sharing
you.
With us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just
Thanks.
Stay up here, please.
I told some people earlier that I was feeling gratitude up to here, but I think it's overflowed.